All right, Acting Tyler.
Tyler.
What's up, guys? So our main speaker tonight came the whole way from Chicago. All right, I'd like to introduce Marvin from New Life Group of NA, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, I'm coming at you. My name is Marvin.
Hi, Marvin.
And I'm truly grateful to be in another Narcotic Anonymous meeting clean. Grateful to my higher power, who I choose to call God, for saving me from me. I'm grateful to the program of Narcotic Anonymous, the fellowship of all you wonderful people, even though I can't see you. You teach me how to live life on life terms and how to deal with death on death terms without the use of drugs today. The 12th step in the Works High and Wide book says that we would do well to remember to ask the God of our understanding to continue working through us in our efforts to carry a message of recovery. So please join me in a moment of silence as I remember to ask the God of my understanding to work through me this evening in my effort to carry a message of recovery. Thank you. Again, I'm a covenant addict. My name is Marvin.
What up, Marvin?
And man, I want to first thank the, I know I'm going to mess this up, Laurel Mountain Highland area. Did I get it right?
Yes, sir.
All right. I want to thank you all for, man, this has been just what it's called, a spiritual event, a spiritual experience for me. Frank last night, when he stood up, he got overwhelmed, and I understood it. You know, sometimes, as he said, when you get it, the reality sinks in of where you at, what you're doing, where you've been. And because of my memory, right, the gift of memory, I don't forget where I've been. I don't forget what it used to be like. And it just gets overwhelming sometimes when you think about, you know, being on a campsite, miles from home, with people that you don't know, people that don't look like you. And look, last night, let me say this too. Frank said, he stood up and he said, yeah, man, I'm uncomfortable. You know, I'm a little uncomfortable and I felt isolated. I felt, you know, my disease wanted to separate me because, you know, I'm not from here and I'm not this and I ain't that. And you all the country people and this, that, and other. So when he finished, I said, well, because I was the only guy here last night of that color. I say, so how you think I feel? You know? But my disease wanted me to think of myself as a black addict when I'm not. I'm an addict. You're not white addicts. You're not Chinese addicts. We are addicts. And what makes us addicts is that we all share the disease of addiction. And so, man, yeah. And so I felt at home, and I want to thank everybody that I ran into for making me feel, right? I didn't feel out of place. I didn't feel like I didn't belong. I felt like an addict at a Narcotic Anonymous event, and the love that Narcotic shares amongst each other is second to none. And so I thank you, Nikki, and the programming and the entire committee, not just the programming committee, but the entire committee. And listen, you all, there's a lot of work goes into putting on events like this. It doesn't just happen. There's a lot of planning and a lot of strategizing and everything. And so I just want to thank this committee again, and I know we did earlier, but let's give the committee another round of applause. And listen, if, and especially with my man Bob, listen, if you couldn't get into the clean time behind Bob, you need to check your pulse. No Bob, something else. I had me fired up, man. And then, most importantly, to the newcomer, the literature that I read says that the newcomer is the most important person at any Narcotic Anonymous meeting, because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. The basic text also goes on to tell us, it says that everything done, everything, whether it's a convention, a retreat, a speaker-thon, speaker jam, a dance, a cookout, or whatever it is, it says everything done in the course of NA service must, that's one of the must be to more effectively carry the message of recovery, everything. So that means that this spiritual retreat, conventions, everything must, the only focus needs to be to more effectively carry the message. Yes, the fellowship is good, food is good, camping is good, seeing people that we don't know for and we haven't seen in a while, meeting new people, all of that's good. But the primary purpose must be to more effectively carry the message. And I've been able to sit in a few workshops, and I need to tell you that the message has been effectively carried this weekend. And so, I'm honored to be here, man. A little bit about me. As I think Tyler said, I am from Chicago, Illinois, right? Born and raised in Chicago. But the number one cause of death is lead poisoning now, so you catch that later on. There's somebody from over here. I grew up in the south side of Chicago, and I grew up in a home. I grew up with a mother and a father. I grew up in a home where we was taught right from wrong. I wasn't put in the system. I wasn't abandoned. I didn't grow up not knowing who my father was or who my mother was. My father and mother didn't teach me how to get high. They didn't teach me, they didn't get high with me. I never saw them using. I never saw my mama tricking. None of that. I grew up in a real home. In a neighborhood. There's a difference in a hood and a neighborhood. In a hood, you don't know your neighbors. In a neighborhood, you know your neighbors. I grew up in a home where I was given every opportunity to succeed. I was taught right from wrong. I was taught morals and values early on. I grew up in a home where we had some requirements that you had to meet. When the lights came on outside, you had to be in the house or on the porch. I grew up in a home where that there was chores in the house. I grew up in a home where there was things you could and could not do. You had company, you had to keep the door open. I grew up in a home where it wasn't no clothes and no bedroom doors and all that kind of stuff. No, I grew up in a home, and look, this is foreign. Some of y'all might remember, there was a time when families ate dinner together. Yeah, that was like back in the Flintstone era. I grew up in a home, we had a family dinner time. And you ate what was cooked, or you went to bed hungry. And so I grew up in that type of home. I was sent to good schools. I was taught right from wrong. I was taken to a place of worship. All of that kind of stuff. Well, if all of that happened for you, Marvin, if you were raised in a good home, you was raised with good parents, you was raised, taught right from wrong, you was this, that, and the other, why are you standing out here at Camp Harmony, sharing in the dark to people you don't know? What happened was that I grew up. And as I grew up, I got smart. And I started to think for myself. I started to think and I started to figure out what I did and didn't need. And it didn't make sense to me that I needed to go to all the classes. If there's 8 classes and I go to 4, I think I'm doing pretty good. It didn't make sense to me to come home and do homework. It didn't make sense to me to come home and stay away from that crowd that my mama was trying to keep me away from. And as a result of that, I started gravitating to negativity. I started clinging to the people in the street. And I started getting involved in all type of antisocial behavior. I grew up. See, what? As I look back and as a result of some step work, Will, I found out that I do real well as long as somebody's thinking for me. That's why I've always done well in treatment. I've done well when I was a kid in the home. I've done well when I would go to jail. Because as long as somebody's thinking for me, I operate real well. But when I get to think for myself, right, when I'm out and I'm on my own, something goes wrong. And so as a result of that, growing up, man, and gravitating to the street and gravitating to everything, let me tell you this too. Everything you've heard about Chicago is true. It's true. Everything you've heard, everything you see on TV, Chirac and this, that, and all that old stuff, that's true. Right? And as a result, there was something, and I didn't understand this until I got to the rooms of Narcotic Anonymous and I started doing some stuff that they call step work. If you don't know what step work is when you sit down and write.
That's right.
On the steps and the traditions of this program. Step work is something you do with a sponsor. It's not what you do in the meetings. It's what you do with a sponsor. And as a result of doing step work, I found out, man, that I grew up in a dysfunctional home. I didn't even know there was a word that existed as a dysfunctional. I grew up in a home where I was not encouraged. Even though I was sent, I was not encouraged. Even though I was told what to do, I wasn't shown what to do. Even though I heard what you should do and who you should be, I wasn't given those examples. My daddy lived to be 90 years old. That was my man. He died in 2012. All my life I knew my daddy. All my life my daddy was there. When I went to jail, when I went to treatment, anything, when they say, who's your emergency contact? It wasn't my mama, it was my daddy. But in all of that time, my daddy died at the age of 90, and when he died, I was 40-something, I don't even know, what it was, 10 years ago, I was 47 years old. And then for those 47 years, I never heard my daddy say, I love you. Never. He was the old school, I'll show you through my money. But he didn't have time to support, he didn't have time to teach, he didn't have time to be there. And so as a result of that, I gravitated to the street, and what I found in the street was that the crazier I behaved, the more attention I got. The more antisocial behavior I practiced, the more attention I got. It said we had to have something different. I had to have something different than what I was being given. And so as a result of that, I gravitated to the street, and I gravitated to street gangs, and they loved me. And I heard the word love for the first time.
And so as I continued on and I grew up, man, and my life, just like all of our lives, it took, look, as I got into all of the negativity, I got everything that come behind that. I got everything that come behind it. And as a result of that, my life did a downward spiral. I was able to graduate from high school. I don't know how. I don't know how, right? And I went away to college, tried college for a year. I flunked out. Matter of fact, tell the truth, Mama, I flunked out in the summer. They had a program where those people that grades was barely college eligible, you go to the summer, you get the grades up, they let you in the fall. Now, how you flunk out of school before school start, I never know. But I flunked out. But I stayed down there. And I hung out and I did. I took all that negative behavior that I practiced at home, that I practiced in the streets of Chicago, I took it down there to the college campus. And I was selling drugs and using drugs and having all kind of wild parties. Everything that went against what I was supposed to do. Everything that reflected rebellion. Everything that reflected, again, antisocial behavior and social skills and all of that kind of stuff, man. And so as a result of that, my life, again, it began a downward spiral. I never forget, man, I got, I was down there and I was off campus. I was staying with this guy and me and him was staying. We had an apartment. And we both were selling marijuana on campus. And so one day he got a box in the mail. And the box came and I put the box to the side. Then when he came in, he said, I told him, hey man, you got a box. Came in the mail, UPS. He said, all right, I've been waiting on this. Now this guy had been down to school probably about 10 years. He's probably about 30. At this time, right? And I'm 19. And so the box came and he opened the box up. And he started pulling out these little glass things, right? He pulling out all these little glass apparatuses. He got bowls and test tubes and all kind of stuff. And this stuff is foreign to me. I've never seen nothing like this. And so all the thing I could think of, I said, well, hell, maybe he got back in school. And so he started, man, night by night, he would have all these wild parties. He would have guys over there, and they would be staying the night. They'd be in and out all night, but that really didn't concern me. And then one night, he had about four or five guys in there. They up all night in his room, and they running in and out. That didn't concern me either. Then one night, he was in there, and he had two women in there. And one came out, she didn't have no top on, went back in, the other one came out, she ain't had no pants on. All of a sudden, I was a little curious as to what's going on in there. And I went on in there, man, and they had all these glass things, these glass bowls and apparatuses and all of that kind of stuff. I said, what are you doing? He said, this is called freebase. He said, this is called freebase. I'm a 19-year-old kid, man. I don't know nothing about this. He'll try it. And he held it up for me and he showed me what to do, but it didn't do nothing for me. It didn't do nothing for me. And I never touched it again. 2 years later, I take my niece home. I had a brother that was living in the housing projects of Chicago. And I let my niece out and something said, go check on your brother. And I know today what that something is because I believe in higher power, so I also believe in a lower power. And I got out of my car and I went inside. You know how you had those moments you say, if I could turn back the hands of time, I would have did things different. I never would have stopped. But I went inside the house, man. I went up the stairs, and he was in the house, in his bedroom. It looked something like this, right? Wasn't no lights on, right? Only thing on was the TV, right? Wasn't no volume on the TV. And he in there is burning up. It's like 150 degrees in the bedroom, and he's sweating, and he got a dinner tray. On one side of the dinner tray, he got some brown stuff, a syringe, a spoon, a rubber band. And on the other side, he got on the tray, he got some white, them white stuff, and he got some those glass apparatuses I had seen before. He got a candle, he got cotton balls, he got surgical scissors, he got all the kind of stuff right going on. And I looked at him, and now this is my hero. And I said, "Hey man, what are you doing?" And he looked at me, he said, "Shh." And so I say, I reached to turn the TV volume up. I turned the lights, and it wasn't no knob on the TV. I hit the light switch. He done unscrewed the bulbs in the bedroom. So I said, "Man, what's going on? Why you got all this stuff off?" He said, "Shh." So I make my move. I'm gonna go to the window, man, to open the curtain. I said, "Man, we gonna get some lights in here. It's too dark in here. It's burning up in here." And he held one of them glass apparatuses up. And he say, "Here, hit this." And he held it up, and he told me what to do. He coached me through it. When I got finished pulling on it, he say, "Now blow it out." And I went to blow it. He say, "Slow down. You're blowing it too fast." When I blew it out, he say, "Hey, did you get it?" I said, "Shh." And for the next 20 years, I chased that shh. For the next 20 years, I went in and out of jail. Today, I stand before you. I have a 66-page rap sheet. I have 6 trips to the Illinois Department of Corrections. And all of it was in the name of one more. And what I like, man, I like this theme, right? Because this theme says, never alone and never again, right? Now check this out. I don't know, I think they go hand to hand. They go hand in hand, right? Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Am I never alone and never going, never again I have to be alone, or never alone because never again this, or never again this so I don't never have to be alone? I don't know, but I do know they go hand in hand. And I was reading today just for the day meditation, man, and I found this. I want to share this with you. It says, choosing life. Now check this out, because we always talk about the yes. Right? We talk about the yes when it comes to our using. It ain't the yes for me. It ain't what I haven't done yet. I just told you I used for over 20 years. It ain't much I haven't done yet. The yes is not what keep me in Narcotic Anonymous. The yes are not the thing that frighten me. Who is an addict say that the ends are always the same? Check this out. It says jails, institutions, dereliction, and death. If you read the chapter says a word called dereliction. What is dereliction? Dereliction is defined as the willful abandonment of responsibility. In other words, if I use today, you don't have to convince me not to pay my mortgage. You don't have to convince me not to go to work. You don't have to convince me not to call my sponsor. You don't have to convince me not to take a bath. You don't have to convince me not to change my drawers. You don't have to convince me. I'm going to willfully give up all responsibility. I ain't paying no insurance. I ain't doing nothing responsible. Then the second definition of dereliction is aimlessly wandering about. No direction. No purpose. I don't know where you used. I don't know how you got high. I lived to use and used to live. I lost my job in 1988. I didn't get another job until I got clean in 2004. All of that time, I lived to use and used to live. All of that time, I destroyed relationships. All of that time, I destroyed self-esteem. All of that time, I destroyed the hopes and dreams that people had, that I had. I really didn't have none. They say lost dreams awaken, new possibility. I didn't really have no dreams, tell you the truth. All hope was gone. Hope was non-existent. And it's that dereliction. It's the again, being a derelict again. Never again. This is a week program. Today, check this out, y'all. It say, active addiction is a smoldering death wish. A smoldering death wish. We got all these campfires out here. When they burn down, they start smoldering. All it takes is a little bit of wood on it. Right? And it flame back up. So when I'm using, right, my death wish is right there. And the more dope I put on it, the more drugs I put on it, the more behavior I put on it, right, the more that flame increases. And say each of us, and this is another thing, listen, this is a we program. Y'all know my story when I come into the room. I know your story when you come into the room. Why? Because it say each of us counted death every time we courted death. Excuse me. Each of us courted death every time we used. Our lifestyle put us at risk. Never again. Never again do I want to court death. Never again do I want to live a lifestyle that puts my life at risk. The life of an addict, check this out, man. The life of an addict is sold cheaply with every day and every dose. Cheaply. Never again do I want to sell my life cheaply. Never again do I want to sell my life. Listen, I don't want to put my life didn't mean nothing to me. I used to sell drugs for boys, for them young boys out on the street corner, and they would be at war with other gangs, and the two gangs would be at each other, and so they would have shootouts, and they would send people to come rob the others, and they'd shoot somebody, and they couldn't find nobody to stand out on the block because all their guys were scared. That's the job I signed up for. I sell. I stand out there. Well, I had ulterior motives because so they wasn't out there. And all of them, I'd take their dope and run off. Telling them guys came shooting, I had to run. Anything. And he stuck me up. But I would put my life on the line in the name of one more. I would put my children's life on the line. Maybe this ain't your story, but you ain't sharing. But I'm sharing. I put my children's life, I put my children's life on the line in the name of one more. And I'm not unique. We did great many, they say our wives, husbands, children, we did many people great harm. Many. We've done a lot of harm. I did a lot of harm to my children. I abandoned them. I failed them. I lied to them. I remember so vividly. We sat down to eat one Sunday. One Sunday morning, we sat down and we ran. There wasn't enough milk in the house. And they were sitting at the table. I said, well, y'all just wait a minute. Leave your cereal right there. Go watch a little TV. I'll be right back. I couldn't go to the corner store and back. 6 months later, I show up. Then been to jail again and got out again and back again and then finally make it home. The agains. I don't want no more. Never again. Never again do I have to degrade myself. Never again do I have to go through the things that I went through to use, man. It say in the beginning, using was fun. All of us remember when using was fun. And listen, let me say this for the record. I don't know about nobody else. I like getting high. Matter of fact, I love getting high. 18 years later, I love getting high. The problem for Marvin S., I don't know your problem. The problem for me is I can't stay high. I got to come down. And when I come down, I either got the things I have to do to get high again, or the fact that I got to face the reality of what I've done while high, it became a bit much. And for me, it was really just I got tired of going to jail. And so I came to Narcotic Anonymous, check this out, not because I wanted to stop using drugs. I ain't come here for that. I came because I needed to stop. I really wanted to use, so I needed some help not to do something that I really wanted to do. I don't know if that makes sense to you. Yeah, I needed help not to do something that I really wanted to do. My story, I don't need help. That's why I stay here now. So it's some other shit that I want to do that y'all tell me I better not do. I heard, I think it was, I think it was the day of men's group, and they was talking about you look out the window, your windows being busted, tires being flat because of your behavior and all that kind of stuff. So I come to hear that kind of stuff. I come to hear what happens when I cuss my boss out. I come to hear what happens when I put my hands on people I don't have no business putting my hands on. I come to hear what happens when you sleep outside your relationship or you sleep outside your marriage and you get caught. I come to hear what happens when you get, either you don't get caught or you go home with a disease that you didn't leave home with. I come for that kind of stuff now. But I needed you all to help me stop doing something I needed to do. You don't need help not to do nothing that you don't want to do. Look, for real. Look, listen. Anybody here ever smoke PCP?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I smoked PCP one time. One time. I didn't go to treatment. I didn't go to the priest. I didn't go nowhere. I prayed to that God, some God, somebody. If you get me down off this one right here. Just let me come down this one time. I promise you, you won't have to worry about, now I might ask you to do something else for me, but it won't be this. Listen, that's some bad stuff, man. Look, watch people, and they have a, you know, they later on down in life, this shit come back. look, that's some bad stuff there. You are like, you got one foot on insanity and the other foot on retardation. And you just hope you can get back to wherever the hell you don't even know where you came from. You don't know where you at. Yeah. kind of like, look, kind of like, you just out there, you don't know where you at, look, look, look. So I text, my sister called me, and she called me, she didn't know I was coming down here, and so she, I couldn't get a call. So I text her when I could find a signal, and I told her where I was at, and yes, and let me be honest, and I said, I'm the only black guy here. And so she said, she texted me back, she said, what? Now, she ain't in recovery, so she don't understand none of this. She said, you what? Well, I hope somebody know where you at. I say, hell, I don't even know where I'm at. And that's how I be with that PC people. But anyway, I ain't gonna beat up nobody on it. But then, look. So I came to Narcotic Anonymous, that was my point, because I needed to stop using, but I really wanted, I enjoyed getting high. I just didn't enjoy what came with it. It had become a bit unbearable. And they talk about that misinformation, all that, that's part of the game, and it's part of what go with it, and all of that. That had just become, that had got old. And so I came to Narcotic Anonymous, and you all taught me, y'all told me something that was so prevalent, y'all said you never have to use again. Never. And just for me, my clarity statement is I will never use again. People say, I don't say never, it's a day at a time program. The books in Chicago, the basic texts in Chicago, there's a chapter called What Can I Do? And in that chapter, it say we have never seen a person who lives the Narcotic Anonymous program relapse. It also says in recovery and relapse, look, so I got clean and I stayed clean for a little while, right? And I thought I was doing something real slick. And then I came across in recovery and relapse, Frank, it say recovery, look, it told me in recovery and relapse that my clean time don't mean shit. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what it said to me. It say recovery as experienced through the 12 steps is our goal, not, watch this word they use, they say mere physical abstinence. Mere. You mean I used all these years to try to get a few days clean, try to get a few months clean, and now you calling my little clean time mere? I think that's some big stuff. They done gave me a cake, they done gave me key tags, they done let me chair the meetings, they done let me be the treasurer, and you saying that my clean time is mere? Nothing. Y'all told me that the steps was my solution. If I never wanted to go again, then I needed to get involved in the step working process. Because, and y'all told me, look, so check this out. After using, today's again, just for the day, it say, because my self-destructive behavior usually went deeper than just using. Even in recovery, we may still treat ourselves if we are worthless. When we treat ourselves badly, we feel badly. And when we feel badly, we seek relief. You know what relief is, don't you? It say maybe in our old solution, maybe in our old solution drugs. What other solutions, what other relief do we use? Sex, gambling, when I feel bad. We treat ourselves, say when we are feeling badly, we seek relief. We seek relief in sex, might seek it in gambling. We might seek it in spending money. We might seek it in working. We might seek it in anger. We might, whatever it takes for relief. And yeah, again, I'm saying we because the book say we. The book says that this is what we do. But guess what? We never alone. We never alone. We never alone when we feel bad. We never alone when we feel worthless. We never alone when we want to seek relief. And that's why it's important, man, that we don't beat people up for where they at. Narcotic Anonymous is, listen, the women didn't found Me Too. Narcotic Anonymous founded the Me Too group. When we hear somebody talking about I'm cheating and I can't stop cheating, Me Too. When we hear somebody talking about my husband making me sick, my wife making me sick, I'm talking to a young lady at my job or I'm talking to another, Me Too. When we start talking about emotional dysfunction and emotional, I'm emotionally unavailable and I feel like getting out of this situation. I feel like cussing my boss out. I feel like gambling. I can't stop gambling. I can't stop spending money. Me Too. This is a Me Too program. That's why we never alone. Because whatever I'm going through, somebody else done been through it. My disease wants me to keep it in. My disease don't want me to tell you that I got a porn problem. My disease don't want me to tell you that the greatest thing that happened to the cell phone is they put porn on it. At work and going to bed, never mind, but anyway. And my disease, I'm talking about mine. My disease, listen, I get up every morning at 4:30, 5 o'clock. I don't leave out the house till 6. I get up in the morning and I have prayer and meditation time. I just finished another 4th step. I just shared with my sponsor my 5th step. Right? I sponsor people. I got a network. I'm serious about my recovery. I'm serious about my program. I'm serious about the newcomer. And in the midst of my prayer and meditation time, my disease don't wait for me to get off my knees. It don't wait for me to stop praying. My disease say, you need to hurry this up. You cutting into the porn time. You're gonna be late for work. And so again, being able to share, listen, we share where we're at. And that's where we never alone. Because somebody, and say our only hope is to live by the example of those who have faced our dilemma and found a way out. Second step say we talk and listen to others. We saw other people recovering and they told us what was working for them. I got to be able to talk to people. My disease wants me to think it's just me. You can't share that. You can't tell that, right? It say, but look, it say choosing recovery means choosing life. Newcomer, you can come here, you can be around all this clean time, you can be around all this recovery, and you can not, listen, you cannot want to get high today. But the choice of being in recovery rests with you. You can be in recovery or you can be around recovery. Yeah, what's the difference, Marvin? When I'm just around. I'm not participating in service. Where I come from, the same people do the same service year in, year out. Right? And yeah, there's room for all manifestations. A lot of people have done their part and they've sat down. That's cool. And we need some young, I thought about this today, walking these hills. I'm like, man, and I know it takes people to walk way over here and set fires and all that kind of stuff. I said, it's for some young people. You need young people to do it. Us old heads, we can't be doing all this kind of stuff, right? And so you need new people. You need fresh blood. That's part of the seventh tradition. Seventh tradition is not just about the money. It's about, what am I donating? Am I donating my service? Am I donating my life? Am I donating to people? Am I donating to the program of Narcotic Anonymous to ensure that the ship stays afloat? I was real encouraged. I listened to the committee, and most of the committee people that was on this committee, you had one guy had a 30-something year, but a lot of them had what, 10 and less. Man, that's good. Y'all carrying the mantle. Y'all taking it further. And so again, we never alone, never again. I don't never again have to put my life on the line. I don't never again have to stand, I don't never again have to go to jail. I don't never again have to degrade myself. I don't never again have to do that. I don't have to court death. I don't have to risk my life every time. I don't have to do none of that. I don't have to be homeless. I don't have to be ashamed to look at my kids in the face. I don't have to be ashamed to look at my parents. Y'all taught me what recovery is all about. And y'all taught me I'll never have to be alone. Listen, as I wind this thing down, the first year I got clean. I was clean 1 year. I didn't understand never alone. I didn't know what it meant, Frank. I didn't know. I heard it, but it didn't make sense. December 23rd, 2005, I had a year and some change clean. I had spent the entire day with my children at their mother's house. We were divorced. Got tired of my shit and left me. I understood. I'd have left me too. I spent the whole day with my children. I got ready to leave about 4 o'clock. And my daughter was sitting on the phone talking to somebody. She was 19 years old. And I leaned over and I kissed her on her forehead. And she said, you leaving, Daddy? And I said, yeah, Bunkin. She said, I love you. And I said, I love you too, baby. And I walked out the house. About 6 o'clock, her mother called me and said, you need to get to the hospital. 2 hours later, she said, Asia, that's my daughter's name, has been in an accident. And you need to get to the hospital. And I said, okay. At that time, I didn't have a job. I was a hustler, selling DVD movies and gym shoes and purses and all kind of stuff. I had been up to New York, you know, you can get anything in New York and all that old kind of stuff. So I had all kind of bootleg shit I was selling. So to me, you're really imposing on my hustle time. And so I went, and I went to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, it was raining. And I'll never forget driving around the hospital looking for a close spot to the door, so when I brought her out of ER, she wouldn't have to get wet. And I went inside the hospital and they was asking me questions. How tall is she, and what's her birth date, and what's her social security number? And I said, well, I was giving them the information, and then I said, why y'all didn't ask her this? And they said, well, when we brought her in, she was unconscious, so we were getting the information from you. But the doctors are going to come talk to you. I said, oh, okay, cool. So she had been in the Air Force. She was home on a leave. I had these pictures of her and her husband and these baby. And so I'm showing the nurses the pictures. And they smiling. And they laugh. Oh, they so pretty. They so pretty. Then all of a sudden, they their face went black. It just went, you know, just the fucking smile left, and they were standing there, and I turned around, and there's three doctors behind me. And the doctors say, Mr. Saunders, we need to go talk. And he said, I need to find somewhere I can talk to you. So I started following him down the hall. He was checking rooms. They was locked. And he said, well, we got to go somewhere nice and private. And I said, well, Doc, I don't know if I like the sound of this. And he said, what I have to tell you, you're not going to like either. And we went in this room, and he said, your daughter, when we brought her in, her cervix was separated from this and that and all this medical shit he gave me. And I said, what are you saying? He said, in layman's terms, she's brain dead because her injuries are not compatible with life. At a year's of change, I hadn't been to Pennsylvania. I hadn't been to Ohio. I hadn't worked 12 steps. I had a pamphlet in my pocket that was a phone list, newcomer. When you go to the meetings, they give you phone lists. They gave me a list that said, call before you use. And I called one person. I said, I'm at the doctor. I haven't called anybody else. And they just told me that my 19-year-old baby ain't gonna wake up. And he said, I'll be right there. And I looked up and people was coming in from everywhere. And I didn't know them. I had never seen them. They wasn't coming because I was Marvin S. They was coming because I was a newcomer that had lost his child. And they was coming up to me and they was saying, hey man, you don't know me. My name is Will, and I'm just here to let you know that you're never alone. Hey man, you don't know me. My name is Sally, and I'm just here to let you know you're never alone. My name is John. I'm just here to let you don't know me. I'm here to let you know that you're never alone. You don't have to go through this alone. And the people loved me. They showed me what never alone meant. And so, and let me tell you this too, man. Let me tell you what I learned. Because, and I heard somebody else say, listen, throughout all of us here have lost somebody, especially in the last 2 years, to the pandemic. We've all lost people we know. We've lost people before that. We're gonna lose some more after that. Right? And the pandemic has been the most difficult time in our nation's history and definitely in my life. But what I've learned is that in every difficulty, Frank, check this out, in every difficulty, it's an opportunity for growth. Every difficulty, whether it's a bad relationship, whether it's a bad marriage, whether it's a bad job, whether it's a bad business venture, whether it's a bad children, bad whatever it is, whatever the difficulty is, it's an opportunity, a bad boss, a bad company, it's an opportunity for growth. The problem with most of us is we miss the opportunity because we're so busy focusing on the difficulty. I'm going to say that again. We miss the opportunity for growth because we focus on the difficulty. And so the most difficult thing I've had to endure was the loss of my daughter to a year and a half clean. But the fellowship, they showed up. You're never alone. 7 years later, I just told y'all about my daddy, right? What I did to get through the death of my daughter is I leaned on the fellowship and I leaned on the God of my understanding. And I, listen, I had a talk with my God. Hey man, what were you doing? How could you allow this to happen? Who allowed you to be God? Who gave you your license as God? You need to be replaced. I really don't think you know what you're doing. But I need you. And if you don't carry me through this thing, I don't know if I can make it. I heard you earlier, Dale, talking about we you're not believing if that God, they used to say, they say God won't put more on you than you can handle. I used to believe that too. I believe that all the way up to December 24th, 2005. But the death of my daughter was too much for me to handle. I couldn't have handled that. There's a poem called Footprints. And in that poem called Footprints, it say that when we look back on the roughest time of our life, we'll see one set of footprints. Because at that point, the God of our understanding carried us through that point. And I believe on December 24th, 2005, the God of my understanding knew that I couldn't handle it. But it was an opportunity for me to see the value of never being alone, the value of the fellowship. And 7 years later, when my dad died, I did the same thing because of the growth. I had to plan my daughter's funeral, I had to buy the clothes, buy the burial spot, everything. It was an opportunity for growth. 7 years later, when I buried my daddy, I did the same thing that I did when I had to deal with the death of my daughter. 7 years after that, I buried my mama. 2 years after that, I buried a sister. 2 years after, this year alone, January and February, I buried two brothers. And now my family is gone. Mom, dad, brothers, sisters, it's just me. But guess what? I ain't alone. Sometimes I feel alone. Sometimes I feel like they gone. The program of Narcotic Anonymous says you are never alone. We here for you. They've been there for every death. All six people I buried. When I say I buried, I'm talking about I buried. Not showed up to the funeral. I did all the stuff. Y'all taught me how to do that. I want to say this about the last person I buried, man, listen, was my brother. My brother was in and out of Narcotic Anonymous, and he just couldn't get it. He just wouldn't get it. He would not. Listen, this is to the person that keeps coming in and out. This is to the person that's here, the newcomer, the old timer that's been in and out. The ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death. Check this out. When I went to clean out my brother's apartment, they found him in his apartment on the floor of an overdose. When I went to clean my brother's apartment out, on the floor by his bed was the basic text of Narcotic Anonymous. On the floor by his bed was the step working guide of Narcotic Anonymous. On the basic text, there was the film of some white powder that would have been on there. In the bed, I ain't making this up, in the bed was a crack pipe and a lighter. He's sleeping with the disease. Got the recovery on the floor, got the answer to addiction on the floor, but he in bed with the disease. That same brother, that brother. Listen, don't play with this thing. This thing is not to be played with. The 11th step, The second step and the 11th step, man, and I'm done, to me, the second step is the most important step. Marvin S. said that, not the book, not the basic text, not nobody else. Don't say he said the book. I ain't said that. I said Marvin S. said it. The second step is, look, the second step, the first step say, now you are ready for step two. The third step say, now you're ready for step four. Four say you're ready for five, so on and so on. Step two is the only step that says if you go over this step with a minimum of concern, won't none of the other steps work. Why? Because in the second step, we begin to develop a working relationship with the God of our understanding. Newcomer, don't let nobody pick your God. You pick your own God. Narcotic Anonymous say all your God needs to be is loving and caring and greater than yourself. And you can come, I came in here with the same God. I heard you there. The same God they was telling me was going to kill me. The same God they said was going to send me to a lake of fire. The same God they said wanted me to go to hell. That's the same God I got today. What's the difference? The difference is I've got to know him for myself. I have an understanding. Listen, it say the covenant came to believe in a power greater than ourselves, right? That could restore us to sanity. I had to get an understanding of that power for myself. And the 11th step say our spiritual condition is our basis for a successful recovery. Where am I at spiritually is going to determine what kind of recovery program I have. It's going to determine how I treat people. It's going to determine whether I jump in or whether I jump out. It's going to determine whether I give or whether I cuss people out. Am I patient, tolerant, understanding, or do I want to fight all the time? Do I want to cuss people out? Do I want to keep investing and going in the same circle all the time? So listen, never again do I have to put my life on hold. Do I have to put my life at risk? Never again do I have to live less than what I believe I deserve or I have an opportunity to live. Man, life is good. Y'all living good. I see it, man. That's some fun stuff. I seen tents and cabins, and I'm going to get on out the way. I know y'all got pots and pans and cookers and all kind of shit set up for the night. And listen, that's what living and enjoying life without the use of drugs is all about. And I'm never alone. I don't have to feel like there's nobody there to love me. I don't have to feel like I'm so bad I can't share what I'm going through. I don't have to feel like don't nobody care. I don't have to feel like people gonna put me down because I'm human and because I'm fallible, because I got defects of character. I don't have to feel like that. Our disease wants us to hold all that stuff in and run us right back. And no, my disease, listen, again, I'm talking about mine. Mine ain't being, he ain't patient, he ain't waiting, he ain't doing none of that. My disease go where I go. When I go to a meeting, we sit in the same chair. When I go to work, my disease is in my office before I get there. Everywhere I go, in my car, my disease is ever present. But so is the program of Narcotic Anonymous. I carry it in my heart, I carry it in my mind, I carry it with you people, no matter where I'm at, man. And listen, as long newcomer again, man, this is, listen, newcomer, you never, ever, 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 ever is a guy here with 49 days, 49 years clean. 49 years. I was 8. Look, I hadn't even got started when he got clean. But guess what? If he can do it, there's a guy here with one day Brother James. I saw James earlier. James, look, I was worried about it. I ain't know he had one day. I'm going to say this to him. I'm going to bust him out right quick. And James is down in the woods, and he saw me, and I spoke to him, and he said, I'm looking for mushrooms. I said, mushrooms? What kind of mushroom? He said, no, not that kind. The kind you cook and eat. I said, oh, okay. But check this out. He said, the ones you talk about, they up there by the cows. I said, how the fuck you know that? Hey, man, James, stick to stay, man. You're the most important person here. And to everybody, man, again, to the, I know I ain't even tried now. Long Mountain Highland area. Man, it's been a great weekend. I thank you all so much for your love. I thank you all for supporting me. I'm recovering out of my mom.
Thank you. Can we get the reading just for today, please?
I'm an addict named Erica. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. And just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So as long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thank you, Erica. We have a great way of closing, guys. Let's make a big circle. Woo!